Hello and welcome to Your Legislators here on KRWG Public Media. I'm your host, Anthony Moreno. Joining us from Santa Fe to talk about the legislative session is District 35 Democratic State Senator John Arthur Smith. Senator Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. It's sort of hectic right now, but we've got time for this.
Well, we're glad to have you. Of course, you chair the Senate Finance Committee, and big news this week, the House passed its $7 billion budget proposal. That's heading your way. What are your thoughts on what you're seeing right now with the House bill being proposed?
You know, the budget process that the House passed actually started last March and April, putting that budget together on that. So it's a working project through the Legislative Finance Committee. The House has chaired it this last year. The Senate will be chairing it this next year on that. But it's a year-long effort putting a budget together. And the final budget that was adopted by House Appropriation is a little over $7 billion on that. That bill will be coming out of the House. Well, the message will come over to the Senate this morning on that, and we'll receive that. And then we will start to work on it. There's some areas that we've already been notified that they wish that they could have shored up a little bit better. In practice, typically, they leave the Senate a little bit of capacity. This year, it's a very small capacity. One of the concerns that we have with the House budget, it's a huge increase versus where we've been the last few years. I think the total increase over the prior year has been somewhere in the 10 to 15% range. I don't have those numbers down exactly at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And so there's a growing concern that there's too much money out there that's been spent in that Appropriation Act. Some of that has been guided on principally by the education spending as a result of a court case. Out of the approximately $650 million in new money, $450 to $500 million of new money will be going into public education, K through 12. On that, and that really was not the catalyst behind that. It was actually the courts rather than the committees. So we will have a certain amount of concerns by minority parties and people within the majority party of can we sustain that type of spending level? And I sympathize with those people that have that concern. I'm knocking on wood. Our revenues are basically support it. 45 cents out of every dollar comes from oil and gas and the permanent fund for that. And that's far too many eggs in one basket. But we're hoping that the economy of the state of New Mexico certainly improves significantly. And we can right the ship on what the courts consider to be underfunding of education.
Yeah, you're talking about the Yazzie lawsuit. So the state has to present a plan by April to address the needs with that lawsuit. Of course, the judge said that the state was not doing enough to educate at-risk students. And so looking at what you see right now, I mean, we're talking about with the House bill, $450 million towards education to better educate at-risk students, help provide better resources for schools that are failing. You know, obviously the lawsuit's going to play a role with what's happening in the Senate Finance Committee coming up with this budget. I'd like to hear your thoughts kind of on, you know, I know you've voiced a lot of concerns about spending all this money on the schools. Obviously, the state is in a better position this year with oil and gas revenue, very different from years past when the state actually took money from school districts to meet the budget needs. Any thoughts on these school districts getting paid back from years past?
Well, I think what you're alluding to, Anthony, is that we were forced to use some of the cash balances from the school districts. The cash balances typically run for the 89 districts and the charter schools in the range of $225 to $250 million a year. What we took back was a very small portion. Quite frankly, our SEG or our funding formula is not at the bottom of the country. Our formula is probably in the lower half, but in the upper third of that lower half. And so there was not a deficiency in the SEG. It's a deficiency, quite frankly, in the programs and the number of educators trying to recruit them. All states are having a difficult time hiring educators, and that is somewhat of a function of salary. We're going to have a 6% salary increase in this budget, trying to mitigate that issue, the obstacle of not being able to recruit educators. About 87 cents out of every dollar that we appropriate for education goes to salary and payroll. So when you're looking at that $450 million, it's going to go to salary and payroll, and you've got to make certain you've got an outstanding classroom educator in front of those kids on that. And so the state has to build capacity. The April deadline that the district judge gave, I think at this stage, we know full well that next year we're still going to be building additional education resources, but we do believe the 450 to 500 range is about all the education community can absorb in 1 year and still hopefully build capacity. We may even find after 1 year that we fund it too quickly. I think the judge will take that into consideration. You know, in that lawsuit, the interesting thing about it, the legislature was not a partner to that lawsuit. It was the public education department and the executive branch. We're trying to fulfill the request of that on that, but we want to fill it in a responsible, sustainable fashion on that. And we believe we're working in that direction. The Legislative Education Study Committee, the Legislative Finance Committee, have been working ever since that ruling came out, trying to come up with a plan that is sustainable, responsible, and efficient, and make certain we have improvement in the classroom. The at-risk factor has been more than doubled on that, and so you're going to see huge financial efforts being made, and it's going to be a continuing story into actually the next session. But we believe that it will certainly fulfill the first portion of the district court's request.
Now, I know another thing that is a big issue in this legislative session that a lot of folks are talking about, have been talking about, is child well-being and early childhood education in the state. Folks have called for drawing another 1% from the land grant permanent fund. Of course, the House was taking action on that. And now I'd like to hear your thoughts. I know you have been quoted as saying that you want hands off the land grant permanent fund. Is that correct? And I'd like to give you a chance to really go on the record and respond why you think that is, if so.
Okay. Number one, you know, I take real exception to the charges that by not tapping into the permanent fund, I was against early childhood. On the Senate side, I was one of the Senate sponsors of full-day kindergarten. My wife would be classified as an early childhood educator. She's retired now. But quite frankly, most people that I speak to have no inclination of how that permanent fund works. That permanent fund is another taxpayer out there. There's a lot of people that believe that we're putting something in a piggy bank and going to use that piggy bank in future years. It's an endowment fund. It's a fourth taxpayer in the state of New Mexico. And between that land grant permanent fund and some spinoff from the severance permanent fund, it's generating into that $7 billion budget right at $1 billion a year right now on that. And the distribution is based on 5%. It's a running average of 5% over a five-year period. And the advocates that want to tap into 6%, the financial analysts that look at that, except for the one that the advocate sent to me from Puerto Rico, have all said that if you exceed 5% distribution, you're putting it in a danger zone, and the financial people have come up with efforts that it may take 20 years, but by tapping into it at 1%, we will see a declining return for day-to-day. And that permanent fund that we're tapping into right now, 85% of that goes into public education. Most of the rest of it will go into higher education and the specialty schools, such as a school for the visually impaired, the school for the hearing impaired, and the New Mexico Military Institute. So those spinoff dollars are being utilized for education. The 5% distribution is one that's subscribed to by Stanford University and at Princeton University, and I use those examples because their permanent fund, endowment fund, is very similar in size to that of the state of New Mexico, and they've tried to generate additional distribution from that and found that they were working outside of a safety zone to preserve that. Now, as far as the early childhood, what people don't realize, there's a perception out there by the advocates that nothing has been done. In the last 7 years, we've gone from about $105 million, and once this budget cycle is completed, we'll be about $470 million, including the Head Start funding from the federal government that we've put in during the most difficult times in New Mexico financial history, growing that. But you also have a capacity issue. We've had some daycare centers revert money back because they did not have the enrollment and on that. So as a result, you want to fund them in a responsible fashion that will permit the ability to build capacity for quality programs. And that's where we are right now. But most of the people that are advocating otherwise, number one, they're paid highly to be lobbyists. On that, they have very high incomes on that, and their job is to get the state and the taxpayers to spend more money, not just in that category, but clear across state government.
So how do you, as somebody who's chairing the Senate Finance Committee, ensure that, you know, the money that is being spent isn't just going to administrative salaries, increasing those salaries, and is going to the classroom?
Well, you know, if I understood your question right, on that, responsible spending comes from responsible people. Responsible education comes from responsible professional educators. So I think the outcome at our higher education schools, whether it be for 2-year programs for certification in early childhood or 4-year degrees, that we're leaving a lot of that training effort up to the universities, and quite frankly, the universities are gearing up in that area. You know, right down in our part of the country at Western New Mexico University in Silver City, when I was talking to the a lady that was in charge of early childhood training programs there, they'd gone from an enrollment of 55 students to one of 175 students. So 155, not 175, but a tremendous growth in this time frame, and they're continuing to build ability to educate more, and we've got to compensate those people better. And on the PED side, we're certainly doing that. We're planning on doing it on the CYFD side with this budget cycle.
Now you brought up bringing in more teachers and educators, but the Legislative Finance Committee, a report in December, said that around half of teachers who leave the profession within 5 years coming out of an educational program like the one you mentioned. So what can lawmakers do to work with policymakers at PED and also universities to ensure that we're going to have the next generation of teachers and they're ready to go and not leaving the profession?
Well, obviously we have a challenge, and the House Bill 2 that's coming across, quite frankly, I don't think it has funded higher education at an adequate amount, and we're going to see if we can't squeeze a few more dollars into higher education budgets on that. But the bottom line is the state of New Mexico, the citizens, we have to work together on this. When we talk about the attrition or the burnout of educators, reminding you, my wife's an early childhood educator, and she retired, quite frankly, while she really liked the kids and still loves the kids. And both of us are not spring chickens, but the bottom line is that I know it's hard work. You know, we had great debate in a few years back or last year on reading by the third grade. I know what it takes to read by the third grade. Those educators are really having to put in hard work, And on the outside, when they move from education to some other field, sometimes they felt that the supportive administrative staff was not with them. The compensation package wasn't adequate for them to stay and take care of their own families. We got to remember they have their families. And we're trying to improve that on the administrative side. We've dedicated, and the last administration has, trying to improve the administrative staff for our public education system. And I think we're starting to make real progress with that.
Now, we were talking about early childhood education. One of the things that's been proposed by Senator Padilla has been to establish a department focusing on early childhood education and care. What are your thoughts on that department as to helping better educate New Mexico's children?
You know, I was unable, you're going to have to repeat that. I was unable to hear you, and the volume is fairly high on the speaker, but it's not coming through.
Okay. I just want to check and see if you could hear me now. Can you hear me now, Senator? Are we okay?
Yeah, right. I can hear you.
Okay.
Better.
Well, I want to talk with you about the proposal to establish a new department focusing on early childhood education and also child care by Senator Padilla. Your thoughts on that, and do you think that this is a sustainable option to create a new department?
Well, we're hoping it's sustainable. Obviously, that's been somewhat of a controversial piece of legislation. I think you're referring to Senate Bill 22 by Senator Michael Padilla, and he's put a lot of effort behind that piece of legislation. It came out of rules, I think, the day before yesterday. With a lot of input, there's been some division as far as that on the early childhood side between the private providers and the public education providers, and Senator Padilla has worked diligently trying to bring those parties together. I believe the way early childhood programs are fractured through the entire state of New Mexico, the principal goal of that piece of legislation is to try and consolidate all of those efforts under one department rather than being fractured on that. A lot of that work has come out of some very diligent and dedicated individuals here in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We have a Catherine Freeman that's worked on that. Michael Weinberger worked on that. And that has been a year-long work product. We believe we know the executive branch is certainly behind that, and we appreciate that. And I think it's worth a try to try and do that, to move that forward, to try and consolidate the division within the early childhood programs throughout the state. And we hope that will be successful.
Now, one of the things that I would like to continue talking with you about is funding in the state. Obviously, it's up with revenue in regards to oil and gas, giving more revenue to the state. I know you've been quoted about saying that the state needs to perhaps diversify some things. I noticed your legislation this year is addressing that in regards to creating taxes. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about that as far as the fuel tax that you have proposed as well. Thoughts on that legislation, and do you support raising the gas tax? Exactly how much? Would you support raising that, if so?
You know, we've got some gas tax bills in the system now, and we've worked with the executive branch staff and said we're flexible to adjust those bills as they're presently drafted to something that would be amenable to the governor. You know, on gas tax, and I want to talk on other taxes here in just a minute, but on gas tax, our gas tax has not changed in 27 years. Our gas tax in, say, around 1994, somewhere in that time frame, bought $1 worth of road. Same gas tax now is buying about 57 cents of road. And with the fuel efficiency of vehicles, the hybrids and the electric cars, it obviously gas tax is not going to take care of all the users that are using our highways right now, and they need to be participants and payers in that category. So I think it needs a complete debate and dialogue, and we're hoping we will get something through. I think one of the recommendations was to have a 10-cent gas tax, and not just on gas, but on special fuels. Our highway department, when it's operating on the same revenue stream, federal and state, that it had 25 years ago, you know, the public's got to recognize that obviously their financial situation's changed over the last 25, 27 years, and so has highway construction. On the gas tax, I'm hoping that that is not totally used for bonding purposes of highways. We have the road to Farmington, and gosh only knows we need that road to Farmington. But that road to Farmington is now, it was bonded in the $270, $290 million range. We're servicing debt with that one and a few others of about $160 million a year. But that road is 20 years old. It's reaching the end of its life, and it's no longer a two-lane road. It's a four-lane road. We have that situation happening all over the state, and we need monies to maintain our roads. And we've been eroding that extensively for several years. Quite frankly, we can sit there and talk all day long about not raising taxes, and that's great music if you like bumping down the highway.
Right. I know we just have a few minutes left, so I want to hear your thoughts on some other taxes. There's been talk about establishing a food tax. I know you have sort of a local option with some legislation you're working on. Could you explain your stance on the food tax and your legislation that you're involved with?
Well, number one on the food tax, let's go back in history. I was not an advocate to repeal the food tax. And we're not talking about moral issues or that. We're talking about revenue stability on the grocery receipts tax from that standpoint. When we start looking at education funding, and this time it'll be on public education, 47.5% of our entire budget is going to go to public education funding, but its success relies on oil and gas right now. We do not have tax stability. When you look at tax stability, and I'm not here to advocate for a property tax, but the most taxes is property tax. New Mexico does not fund public education operation out of property tax. And so it's not stable there. The next most stable, reliable tax stream is gross receipts tax. And we have eliminated a good portion of the gross receipts tax. For the people that live in metropolitan statistical areas, that's fine and dandy, but you start going to smaller towns, much like my district down in Deming, Silver City, Lordsburg, TRC, they don't have the presence of retail anymore. Car dealerships have moved on to larger cities for the most part on that. And so their gross receipts tax is reliant on fast foods on that, because there was no money being derived from grocery sales. Yet there's demand for services by those citizens there, and local governments do not have a way of paying for those services. Now, we've subsidized as a state those payments to local governments, but we were successful in doing that when natural gas was at $10 a cubic foot. When it collapsed to like $2.63 right now, we don't have that capacity to keep upfronting money to local governments. And oil, when it's abundant, we can still do that, but when it dies, we don't have that capacity. So I'm looking at food tax for a debate and dialogue to be a participant in how do we stabilize our revenue stream for our education system on that. But people like to read the headlines on what it is, and I get emails every day on what's responsible and what's not responsible, but what they think is responsible doesn't always pay the bills.
Now, one thing with the budget that's been proposed this year, it's already drawn some criticism on the House bill that's coming out of the House that they've passed recently. Folks who are state employees, groups that are representing them, have voiced concerns that they haven't seen a significant raise in years. Any thoughts on that being addressed in this budget?
I heard you say on state employees, but I did not get the question, Anthony.
Okay, I'd like to hear your thoughts. I know there was some frustration from groups representing public employees here in New Mexico, state employees to be specific, And I knew there was some frustration that there was a lot of focus on paying off of film industries that the state still owed money due to the film subsidy, paying off the tax credits to them. Some state employees, groups representing them, were frustrated that the state employees have not seen a significant raise in many years. Any thoughts on that being addressed in the budget on your
end? Yes, I do. Obviously, on the film industry, you can go back and check the records. I was one of the first that wanted to put a cap on the film industry on that and was not successful. And the film industry is obviously has grown. And I really don't have a bone to pick with the film industry if they provide year-round jobs. A lot of the film industry jobs do not provide that. There's a backlog of debt owed by the state of New Mexico of right at 300, and I'm hearing now it may be $382 million of one-time money, and payment will be shoved out front into the future where it might take 3 or 4 years to pay that off. There's additional requests by the administration to take the cap off, and so that deficiency will probably run well into the future. I think we have an obligation to make certain we pay that debt. I don't know exactly how quickly we can pay that. I think in the time frame of 3 or 4 years, we can probably handle that, but 300 to 382 million is a lot in one setting on that. But the industry understood that. They subscribed to that, recognizing the fact that it would be the out years before they got totally paid. And you know, it's not a tax credit, it's a rebate. We just flat give them money up front. But we also are gonna have to cap that, and I know the administration is not advocating that, but we have to know how much we're spending on that. So I sympathize with the state employees when they see that issue out there, especially the state employees that really understand the pension obligation and the difficult situation our pension funds are in on that. So I'm a supporter of their concerns, and I think they're legitimate concerns that they have in that area.
Okay, Senator Smith, unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much, though, for taking the time to join us on your legislators. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, Anthony.
And we want to thank you for joining us on your legislators. I'm Anthony Moreno. We'll see you next time.